You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, students have been at the center of controversies and public concern for thousands of years. We'll talk to the author of a new book about the qualities that have unified students of all kinds over the centuries. First, it's the WPR Fall Member Drive. Kate Archer Kent is with me at WPR. Listener contributions are the largest source of funding. Your gift keeps the programs you value on the air. Make your contribution right now online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And Kate, great reason to do it right now.
Do it right now because we have a dollar for dollar match up to $2,000. This generous match is from current members, including a member in West Allis, and it means that they'll match every dollar you give.
It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Double your support right now. Fantastic opportunity. Do it online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Federal and state tax dollars, which do come from listeners like you, provide important funding for WPR programs. But voluntary listener contributions are actually the biggest piece of support, the biggest piece of the funding pie for WPR programs.
You make a difference. You make the quality, variety, and independence of programs on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Because WPR matters to you, make a personal gift to pay for the programs you listen to at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This member drive asks for your new WPR belt bag. Stylish belt bag. It's black, white design, and it is the perfect way to keep your essentials close. And you can proudly display your support for WPR programs. So ask for yours when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Everything you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio comes from a lot of preparation and thought, a team effort. We do our homework so you get the highest quality radio programs. Show your commitment to that quality. Commit now when you make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The programs you hear on WPR make a difference in your life, and that is why you're listening now and why you listen every day. So during this fall member drive, we're asking you to support your radio home.
Listeners who value public radio give what they can to support it. That's how it works. If you're already a member, thank you so much for making Wisconsin Public Radio possible. If you're not a member yet, today's a great day to become one. Make your first ever gift. Maybe it's $100. Maybe it's $10 a month. It'll get matched dollar for dollar right now. Give the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As Rob said, our dollar for dollar match is in effect. We have about $2,000 left to raise. So give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
Hey, a little added bonus here. When you support the programs you love, your donation will enter you to win a 5-piece cast iron cookware set from La Crusade. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Sustainers, people making ongoing monthly gifts, you are already entered.
If you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you so much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month or whatever amount you choose. You can go and do that at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Elizabeth in Galesburg says, I canceled my streaming services and became a member of WPR when I realized I was actually more interested in the stories I hear on your program. Fantastic, Elizabeth. Thank you so much.
We appreciate that. Join Elizabeth now with your gift. It is so important at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Central Time. There have been a lot of controversies surrounding higher education in recent years. There's too much focus on career preparation or not enough focus on career preparation. There's not enough attention to the classics, too much attention on more recent works, or vice versa. Students aren't being challenged to think independently. Students are being indoctrinated with political beliefs and so on. Our next guest says these concerns may look new, but they fit into a long history of debates over the role of education. In his new book, he traces that history over thousands of years with a central focus on the student. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think today's college experience seems different than in decades past? Do you think students themselves are different? How valuable is higher education in today's society? And college or not, higher education or not, do you think of yourself as a lifelong learner? And what does that mean to you? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Michael Roth is president of Wesleyan University. His new book is called The Student, A Short History. Michael, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks very much. Good to be here.
I want to go back to the earliest types of students you mentioned. You give three legendary teaching figures, Socrates, Confucius, and Jesus, and talk about them as having a different educational style, a different role of the student. Can you lay out some of those different visions for us?
Sure. When I was thinking about the idea of the student and how to get started in writing about it, I thought to myself about teachers, that it's, you know, I suppose you could be a self-taught student, but most of us think of students as having teachers. And I teach great books courses here at Wesleyan and have done that at other places. And it seemed to me that there are these three iconic models of the teacher from the ancient world. One is Confucius, whose followers engage in conversations with him and try to follow the path he laid out for them. The second is Socrates, whose conversation partners were engaged in critical thinking and trying to figure out how much of what they thought they knew, they didn't really know. And they loved watching Socrates interrogate well-to-do people or pretentious people in Athens and him for him to show that those people didn't know what they thought they knew. And that's another path of being a student, that Socrates was a teacher who exposed the ignorance of others and talked about his own ignorance, that he didn't pretend to know things that he didn't know. And finally, Jesus, who tells us, like Confucius, says to the apostles, follow me. But in the case of Jesus as teacher, Jesus is asking people to imitate a certain way of life. And how can I transform my existence by emulating the life of this great teacher, Jesus? And so those three paths, following the critical thinking and transformation through imitation, they hover through education, especially in the West, ever since then until our own day.
That I bring that up now, we're going to focus, I think, more on modern day education, but it raises the question when we argue about our schools doing well, are our colleges and universities doing their job well? It seems like we can't even agree on what an education should be. The question is, what is education? What should things be like for a student? We've been arguing about those for literally centuries. How do we try to settle those questions?
It's really hard to imagine to settle them because being a student has come to mean ever since the 1700s, up until the 1700s, being a student was learning how to be independent, maybe learning how to set up your own household in your village or your town. Or it could be learning a trade. I write about apprentices in one of the early chapters of the book, and failed apprentices like Ben Franklin and Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who couldn't take being an apprentice, but they were just trying to learn a trade, trying to learn how to be a printer or an engraver. But in the late 1700s, this notion develops that being a student means learning to think for yourself. Now, there's a paradox there because you have a teacher, but you're supposed to learn to think for yourself to outgrow your immaturity. Now, for people of any age, there will be great disagreements of what it means to think for yourself in the company of others. What does it mean to no longer be immature? There will never be a settled answer to this. We still want students, when they graduate, to be independent, to be able to set up their own household, to get a job in our time. But we also want them to act with autonomy and in community. And that is that balancing act of thinking for yourself in the company of others, of having autonomy, but also participating in your neighborhood or in your community. Those are always going to be contentious issues, and older people will always complain about younger people. That's something I said throughout this history, see, that older people will always bemoan the fact that young people are not like we were when we were young.
We're talking to Michael Roth, president of Wesleyan University, author of the new book, The Student, A Short History. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When you were in school, whether we're talking high school or college, what, if anything, was your motivation? What did you do to try to learn? What were you hoping to get out of it? Do you still pursue education and knowledge, maybe years, maybe decades after your last formal schooling? Join 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Michael Roth is with us talking about his new book, The Student, A Short History. He's president of Wesleyan University. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Good afternoon, Rob. So I personally try to continuously learn no matter what. Knowledge is power. It, you know, knowing that how things work can save your life, to swim when a tsunami might be coming in or how to swim through a riptide. I have a quote, and my quote is this: "The world is my classroom. Everyone and everything has a lesson to teach, and wisdom is the ability to decipher the lesson."
Marcus, thanks for the call. Michael, you use a phrase in your book that we use a lot here at Public Radio, lifelong learning. Sounds like Marcus has embraced that. Can you talk about the concept?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's hand in hand with this notion that being a student is more than just acquiring a skill. It is acquiring a mindset that is open to experimentation and learning from others. And learning from nature and learning from the world, as Marcus said. And I think that I meet many, many people in my duties at Wesleyan who's dropping off their children here for freshman year. And they say things to me like, "Now I wish I could go back to school because now I'd really take advantage of all the things that the university has to offer." And I think that's something many people do, whether it's in book clubs or in Bible study or more informally, that to keep an open mind, to learn from other people. We've gotten, you know, this has become a problem in the United States. It's very hard for people to listen to one another when they anticipate disagreement. But being a perpetual student or a lifelong learner means being open to discovering that someone else has a better idea, that your idea may be wrong. And I think that that mindset, which I see in young people all over the place, really, that they're willing to entertain different ideas and they have a high tolerance for ambiguity. Those are key ingredients to being a lifelong learner.
Marcus, thanks for the call. Jeff is with us now in Superior. Jeff, hello.
Hi, I also consider myself a lifelong learner, and Wisconsin Public Radio really helps me in that regard. My observation is this, that when I went to college, I studied mostly alone until I took a Great Book Seminar class, and I was working on the radio station, and the day Reagan was shot, I announced it on the radio and went right down to my seminar where we were reading Aristotle's Politics. And I'll never forget that moment because we processed it as a group, about a dozen of us. But when I went back years later to my university, most of the students were studying as a group instead of individually. So I think, you know, colleges have advanced to learn that it's better to learn as a group.
Jeff, thanks for the call, and thanks for sharing that anecdote and the kind words too, Jeff. Michael, you talk about this is a trend, it sounds like, more and more group learning, maybe group assignments, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. One of the things we know is when you get out of school, having the ability to work with other people makes you a much better contributor, no matter what kind of work you're doing. Sometimes one needs to isolate to do solitary work, but it's so important to learn from other people. And it's really important that we don't think about students as passive recipients of a teacher's message. So I teach a Great Books course, but I really want my students to respond, to wrestle with the text, to tell me why they think an author says what he or she says. And that group dynamic it fuels learning in a way that is really exciting for students. I mean, I love sitting in the house and reading a book myself, but I think the real dynamic of learning is accelerated when we're together wrestling with books or numbers or ideas in small groups.
Thanks again for that call, Jeff. I want to talk a little bit, Michael. You conclude, if you don't mind me going, spoiling the ending a little bit, you conclude with some lessons, I think, or some suggestions for how students can approach learning. You have a three-point plan in a way. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think when students are going to college, and it probably is relevant to other schools as well, that they should really discover what they love to do. And that's not just discovering your inner passion, but things that you really find fulfilling when you're working hard at them. And then the second thing is that you have to get much better at it. I mean, I'm at a school that is very selective and, you know, we have lots of smart people, but when they get here, I want them to feel like Socrates did with his students. I want them to feel dumb. I want them to feel like, gosh, I could get so much better at this. I thought I was pretty good, but I can get a lot better. So discover what you love to do, get really much better at it, and then figure out, with the help of your friends and your teachers and sometimes a career center, figure out how to take what you've learned to do on campus or at school and apply it somehow in the world, so that when the you're doing the work you find you're good at and you find brings you fulfillment in the world, other people find it valuable too. And so I think it's really important that we don't tell students that what you really have to do is be great while you're at school. The proof of a good education is what you do with it when you're no longer in the educational institution. And that's especially true for liberal arts. And that's why I talk about pragmatic liberal learning. You have to put this education to use in ways that other people recognize is valuable.
And as we wrap up, Michael, I want to talk about, you have also some suggestions on how to engage with an idea or an author. And I think there's sort of an internet comment section impulse to say, yes, I agree with this, or no, I see this one flaw in it. We must discard this whole thing. Do you have some thoughts for all of us, not just students, on how to engage with an idea and evaluate it for good and bad?
Sure. I tell my students the game that we play in my classes is that we don't tell me or the other people what we think of Aristotle, what we think. Today I was teaching Darwin. What we try to do is understand why they said what they said, why they argued the way they did, and why some people find this so compelling and so powerful. That way the student can bracket judgment. We're not about liking or unliking or finding a flaw or somehow taking something down. What we really want to do is understand from the inside why people present or argue the way they do. In that way, we become more attentive listeners. There's always time for judgment. People will make their judgments. Lord knows we have a lot of judgments going on right now. But what we need are more attentive and more sympathetic listeners so that we can learn from one another even when we disagree.
Michael, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Michael Roth, president of Wesleyan University. His new book is called The Student, A Short History. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Kate Archer-Kent is in the studio with me. You count on WPR for great conversations. It's your gift of any amount that makes these conversations possible. Listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. That's why your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
We have this dollar-for-dollar match that is in effect right now. It is underway from current members, including a member in West Allis. So you can make sure you get in that match. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 to $200. Take advantage of this match money on the table. Double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And that last conversation, we learned about learning, how we learn, ways of learning, different approaches to it, and some thoughts to help all of us. So that book, the title was The Student. I think the guest made clear we're all students. We can all learn from that. We are big fans of lifelong learning here at Wisconsin Public Radio. We are always trying to find out new things about the world. If there's one statement I think I can make about everybody listening in common is that you want to learn stuff and know stuff, and you know that these are the kind of conversations you can count on here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I see it. I see the thread there. WPR is listener supported, and it means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It makes the wealth of topics that you tune in for every day possible here on Central Time. So choose an amount that works for you, then make your gift.
You've probably heard about our monthly giving program. More than half of our members are now sustainers. It's easy to become a sustainer and get your gift matched right now with that dollar for dollar match. All you got to do is set up automatic monthly gifts from your bank account or your credit card.
In addition to funding the programs you love, here is another great reason to sign up for ongoing monthly gifts. Sustainers are automatically entered in the drawing for a 5-piece cast iron cookware set from La Crusade. Start your ongoing monthly gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Why should you give at this moment? Well, A, there's that dollar for dollar match right now. And B, because you're listening right now and you're thinking about it right now.
And it'll feel really good when you do it. WPR is an important public service, and you'll be taking an investment in quality music and entertainment and news and in talk.
We use your donation wisely and carefully, putting it into programs that you hear every day. Support WPR right now with a dollar for dollar match at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And consider the news, the information, the inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. Get in on this match at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Kathy and McFarland says, every time I'm in the car, I'm listening to WPR. What would I do without you? Kathy, thanks so much. Great time to join Kathy. Dollar for dollar match. Get into that drawing for amazing cookware. Support great radio at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A new art exhibit about infertility is coming to Milwaukee for a month-long engagement. One of the curators joins us to preview what visitors can expect to see and why it's important to tell stories about infertility through art and writing. First, Kate Archer Kent joins me for the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. You count on Wisconsin Public Radio for interesting conversations. We count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
That is true. Listener support is the largest piece of the funding that makes Central Time and all the others that you enjoy possible. And that's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
This is a great time to give right now because we have this dollar for dollar match in effect right now. It's up to $2,000. We're a few hundred dollars in, still room for your gift. It's a great time to give because here's how it works. Current members, including a member in West Allis, are going to double every dollar you give. It's their way of inspiring you, of maybe challenging you to support Wisconsin Public Radio, not someday, but now, this hour. Double the impact of your gift when you make it right now online at WPR.org. That's working again if you had trouble earlier, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552.
Here on Wisconsin Public Radio, you hear diverse viewpoints from different guests. You've got the callers bringing a unique perspective to the conversation and lived experience. And because there's so much good food for thought in these programs, you probably find yourself starting conversations with, well, you know, yesterday on WPR, I heard Rocket Rob talking about. So it's time to take action to participate in making this show happen with your support at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
As the donor, you get to decide how much to give. Maybe $100 or $200 a month is the right amount for you.
And that might be what you spend every month on that takeout or entertainment, for instance, things you enjoy that make life better. Just like listening to WPR, the important thing is, though, is that you decide what amount is right for you and then make your gift, get in on the match, make it go further dollar for dollar at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552.
This member drive, let WPR help you keep up with the latest fashion trends. Ask for your WPR belt bag when you give $10 a month for the programs you rely on. How would you use your WPR belt bag?
How wouldn't I use it?
I'd keep snacks in my WPR belt bag.
Could be used as a fanny pack.
To hold all the accoutrement of my life.
You could just put it off the side on your hip if you're so inclined. Either hip would work, left or right.
I'd use my WPR belt bag when I travel. All my important stuff right there on my waist, quick and easy to grab.
Keep your essentials close and accessible while proudly displaying your support for WPR with this stylish accessory. Ask for yours when you give $10 a month or more. Here's how.
Make that gift. Get that belt bag online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Central Time, Rob Ferret here with Kate Archer-Kent. Your support during this fall member drive makes the WPR programs you count on possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, it's the right amount, and it gets matched dollar for dollar over the next 20 minutes. Get on that.
Get on that is right, and giving to WPR is easy. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
It takes just a few minutes to make your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio. Those few minutes fund your daily listening. Your support right now really makes a difference, and it gets matched dollar for dollar at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your gift of, say, $10 or $20 a month makes intelligent radio available to the entire state of Wisconsin and well beyond our borders. You can see why your gift is so powerful.
And that big impact is accomplished over the course of just a few minutes. Give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Our dollar for dollar match, it is in effect, and we have match money left to go here. So give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
Added bonus for supporting the programs you love, getting that match met. Your donation also enters you to win a 5-piece cast iron cookware set from La Cruze. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. If you're a sustainer making those ongoing monthly gifts, you are automatically entered.
And if you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you so much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by, say, $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount works for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I think I'll say, I think we could set this, that increased sustainer amount, that's going to get matched too. I think I have that right.
So, I think so.
Get your new gift matched, your expanded sustainer gift matched, whatever, dollar for dollar right now. Make that gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. In the United States, approximately 1 in 8 individuals or couples have difficulty getting pregnant or sustaining a pregnancy. And infertility can affect people from all backgrounds, and that includes people of color, members of the LGBTQ community, people of all ages, across the socioeconomic spectrum. A new month-long exhibit coming to Whitefish Bay, just north of Milwaukee, hopes to spark a conversation about the diverse experiences of infertility for patients and their loved ones, healthcare providers, and policymakers here in the state. One of the exhibit's curators joins us now for a preview of some of the art and storytelling on display and to tackle some myths that persist about infertility. Maria Novotny is Assistant Professor of English at UW-Milwaukee, co-director of The Art of Infertility, and co-editor of the book Infertilities, A Curation. Maria, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Might sound like a simple question, but as you point out in your book, it maybe isn't so simple. What are we talking about when we talk about infertility?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. Infertility, I think, is something that we actually don't actually talk a lot about. We're really great at, you know, celebrating pregnancies, celebrating Mother's Day, Father's Day. But infertility itself and recurrent reproductive loss is something that's still experienced with a lot of stigma, a lot of shame. But the reality is that infertility is, you know, it's a medical condition and it impacts lots of individuals. I know in your introduction, you said that it impacts 1 in 8. And actually in writing our book, the World Health Organization updated that statistic to 1 in 6 people. So we know that it's impacting a lot of people and a lot of people in our state. In fact, in Wisconsin, there's 172,000 people who are living with infertility. And there are a lot of different challenges that come with that diagnosis.
When I think about infertility, if I think about what I've seen in pop culture, I guess the vision that pops into my mind is probably middle-class white couple, a little older than the usual childbearing years. One big point in the book, and I think in the exhibit is as well, is that is not the only face of infertility. Could you talk about how you're trying to expand that story?
Yeah, we are. You're so right. Infertility, right? It does not discriminate. So there is that common type of myth, right? That this only impacts white, rich women. When in fact, actually Black and Brown women are more likely to experience infertility or recurrent loss because of underlying health conditions, such as ovarian issues or PCOS, but then also men are impacted by infertility. A common unknown fact that we talk a lot about in the book is that, you know, an infertility diagnosis, sometimes it's 1/3 of female factor issues, such as endometriosis. 1/3 is also a male factor issue, such as, you know, having low sperm count or bad sperm mobility. And then 1/3 is also a combination of unexplained or unknown or a factor of female factor and male factor. And the reality is too, right, that that doesn't also include same-sex individuals, right, who, you know, aren't having heterosexual sex to conceive a child. And so it's a limited definition. And that's really what we're trying to push on with the title, Infertilities, of both the exhibit and the book. The idea that there's not just one experience of infertility. You might have a cancer diagnosis and need to have fertility care in order to build your family. Again, you might have endometriosis and need to see a fertility doctor. There are multiple different reasons, multiple different people that are impacted by infertility. And we need to do a better job, I think, really understanding this as a medical issue, because there are a lot of financial barriers that come to actually treating your fertility diagnosis and then also building your family.
Now, when I first read about this exhibit and the book, I thought, okay, important issue, good to get people talking about it. What is that going to look like as an art exhibit? Can you walk us through what we'll actually see if we check out the in-person version of Infertility's A Curation?
Yeah, so it's such a unique experience because it's all patient-created pieces of art. Lots of times when you're going with infertility and experiencing it, it can be so difficult, so painful to go through and explain using words the emotions, right, of what it means to have that loss, to have another IVF cycle not work, to still have not that take-home baby in some instances. And so what we're trying to do with the art is really, again, portray the wider range. So we have some beautiful murals, for instance, of pieces that are made up of small individual syringes, but then also they're cut up and replaced together. Boxes of fertility drugs and needles, and then create these images of a family. We also have a cradle that contains a whole series of an IVF treatment. So you can see all the medications, all the syringes, all the shots that go into just trying to have one baby. And the reality is that that cycle for that person who created this piece, it never actually worked. And so you can see an empty crib just filled with unused syringes and medication boxes. It's really a powerful exhibit. And I encourage people to come and check it out on Friday.
Talking to Maria Novotny from UW-Milwaukee, co-director of The Art of Infertility, co-editor of the book Infertility's A Curation, an exhibit opening up and in the area. We'll give you some more information about that in just a bit. We've got a link at WPR.org/Central Time. Maria, we've tackled some, I think, of the myths of infertility, but in a lot of the stories in the book, people encounter when they are willing to talk to people about it, I think people encounter strange reactions that might make them not want to talk about it. What are some of the things you want people to know to say, maybe not to say, to that friend or loved one who's dealing with various types of infertility?
Yeah, it can be really triggering. I mean, I myself have had experienced my own infertility. And so I still, you know, have to encounter, you know, when I get an announcement for a baby shower or a friend or family member, right, tells me that they're expecting. It's hard to know, you know, what to say when you have a friend that's going through infertility and you yourself are pregnant, how to kind of navigate that. It's also hard and difficult, right, on the person who is infertile to, you know, navigate what that experience is, because you want to be happy for them, but you're also sad at the same time. So some good things, right, to say are, you know, I'm so sorry. I know this is probably hurtful for you, or to tell people in advance before they do a big pregnancy announcement, to give them a heads up, to say, hey, I need to tell you something in a text, to try and set them down, to give them time to really process, right, what it means, how the relationship with this person might change now that they're going to have a baby welcoming into their family. There's also things not to say, right? So a common thing not to say is, I know that this is going to work out for you. I know that this next baby is going to be for you. Or I know that your time's going to come. Or, you know, you can always just adopt. Those are myths, right, that simply don't actually pan out, right? Because we know, for instance, one IVF cycle often doesn't result in a take-home baby. We also know that adoption, right, is not an easy solution, because adoption has a lot of costs and a lot of challenges associated with it too. And also adoptions can fail. Sometimes babies can't be taken home through that adoption practice. So these are all things to think about, and we offer a variety of different solutions and ideas in our book, Infertilities.
You divide the book into three different sections, and you kind of just queued up the last one, the conclusion, the outcomes of people's infertility experiences, and they may come out in very different ways that in some cases people may be happy with in very different ways. Can you talk about some of the different outcomes that people portray in the book?
Yeah. So just like I was mentioning with infertilities, you know, being a representative of all the different ways you may come to an infertility diagnosis. We also use the word infertilities because success does not equate a take-home baby. Infertility, right, is a lifelong type of identity and experience. For myself, for instance, I'm an adoptive mom. And so even though I've, quote, resolved my family building through my adoption, I'm still navigating infertility by having questions about, you know, why does my child have different color hair than I do, which are all innocent and well-meaning. But they're really ways in which that remind, you know, if you are infertile, the ways in which infertility doesn't just go away. And so with our book, with the third section, we're again really trying to speak back against those norms that, you know, success is going to happen. You are going to be able to beat infertility. Sometimes what really happens is that people need to come to their own new identity, new narrative of what success is. So that might be having to, you know, actually build your family through adoption, even though you really wanted to have a biological child, but that no longer is the route that you can do that. Sometimes it's simply, you know, residing that, you know, you're going to live child free, that you've spent enough money trying to make this happen, that you've gone through enough pain, and that you want to, you know, rethink what it's like to live your life without children. And those can be difficult decisions. There's a lot of grief in that, on top of grieving the fact that, you know, you can't naturally get pregnant the way that you always thought. And so we're really, again, trying to represent the realities of what it's like to live with infertility, not just like when you're receiving treatment, but, you know, throughout your life, throughout the ways in which family building, which is heralded as something to be celebrated, something that we like to celebrate, especially in the Midwest, to really talk a little bit about, you know, what are the realities and ways in which people have to kind of cope and grieve with the multiple different losses that come with infertility.
And Maria, are you hopeful that readers and viewers of the exhibit will be able to start talking about their own experiences with infertility, where they might not have been willing to or able to in the past?
We are. And that's really the point of having like art exhibits. Art exhibitions that are made public, right? It's the idea that, you know, people who may think that they had no or little idea about what infertility is or how it impacts them, to kind of come away from the exhibit, seeing a lot of the pain, the challenges, the misconceptions really that come with an infertility diagnosis, and the realities that in our state of Wisconsin, for instance, there is no insurance mandate covering infertility. And so it can make really difficult decisions about what it is that you can afford in terms of treatment. We're hopeful helpful that, you know, the exhibit itself being free, accessible to anyone, can really, again, do some of the educational work, do some awareness work, and really help invite other individuals throughout the state who might not be infertile to think about ways in which they can be more allies, and make more accessible alternative paths to family building.
Maria, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Great. Thank you so much.
That's Maria Novotny, Assistant Professor of English at UW-Milwaukee, co-director of The Art of Infertility, co-editor of the new book called Infertilities, A Curation. She joined us for a preview of an art exhibit about the experience of infertility. It's coming to the Milwaukee area this month. Find a full lineup of events either at artofinfertility.org/Milwaukee-WI, or you can just go over to WPR.org Central Time. We're going to have a link up there for you as well. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Kate Archer-Kent is in the studio with me, asking you to invest just a few minutes of time to support your WPR listening.
Yes, listener support. It makes up the largest piece of the funding for the WPR programs you count on. And that's why your gift now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It's so important.
We have this dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members, including a member in West Allis. Your gift will be matched dollar-for-dollar. We had a big jump toward our goal, but there is still room for your gift to be matched if you make it right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Such a fascinating conversation about the complexities of infertility and how to talk about it, how people experience it in different ways. And this art, this exhibit, The Art of Infertility, that is coming to the region. These are informative, thoughtful conversations that you can count on from Wisconsin Public Radio.
And because WPR is listener supported, it means that your donation at WPR.org, 888-202-2552, makes that and all our conversations possible. Choose an amount that works for you. Know that you're going to get it doubled. Then make your gift.
Yes, and this member drive, show off your support for the WPR programs you value with the new WPR belt bag. It's stylish. It's hands-free. It's a perfect way to keep your phone and your wallet and your keys close and accessible. Your new WPR belt bag will broadcast your commitment to the news, the information, and entertainment our community relies on. So ask for your WPR belt bag when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We just got another $100 closer to that dollar for dollar match goal. Counting down, 800 to go. We can do it with your support. Make your gift right now. We count on you to help pay for all your favorite Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Now is a great time to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and get your gift matched.
And if you've never given before and you look forward to listening to WPR every day, that's a sign it's time to donate. When you spend that much time with WPR, that means it's important to you.
Well, I hope you know that you are important to us as well, because you listen, of course, and because we are listener-supported radio. We count on financial participation from people like you who care about independent news, conversation, and music. So your gift right now really does make a difference, and it gets doubled for just the next few minutes. We'll keep counting that into the news at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As Rob said, we have the dollar-for-dollar match in effect. We have about $687 left to raise to take advantage of this match. Give now. Get in on it. WPR.org is the way, or call 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
Got to get in on it right now if you want to get your gift doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Added bonus, get entered into a drawing for a 5-piece cast iron cookware set from La Cruzet. It's a great time to give, dollar-for-dollar match. Fantastic drawing for the cooks out there. Or if you want to give a great gift to a cook out there, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I want to give a shout-out to David in Fitchburg, who says, from childhood to my first job, WPR has been there for me. I'm so happy to finally be able to give back. Much love to you all.
Thank you so much. Oh, we're so close to our dollar-for-dollar match goal. You might be the one to put us over the top. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you.